The better part of 2 hours later, Hoskins leaned back in his chair and rubbed his eyes lightly. Those eyes were no longer as young as they'd once been, and although Esmelda Dobbins kept the lamp's reflectors brightly polished, their illumination was a poor substitute for daylight.
"And it's not exactly as if you had the best handwriting in the world either, Timon," he reminded himself.
Which was true enough. Fortunately, he was just about finished. He wanted to let the thoughts roll around in his brain for another day or so before he put it into final form, and there were a couple of scriptural passages he needed to consider inserting. As a general rule, he tried to avoid weighting his sermons with too much scripture, yet his thoughts chopped off abruptly as the heavy cloth bag descended over his head from behind. Total shock immobilized him for a single heartbeat, which was just long enough for whoever had managed to creep so silently into the study behind him that he'd never heard a thing to jerk the throat of the bag tight around his neck. He started to reach up and back, arching to fling himself out of the chair, then stopped as cold, sharp steel touched his throat just below the edge of the bag.
"Make one sound," a voice hissed in his ear, "and I cut your fucking throat right now."
He froze, heart racing, and someone laughed quietly. It was an ugly, hungry sound. "Better," the voice said, and he knew now that there were at least two of them, because it didn't belong to the man who'd laughed.
"Now you're coming with us," the voice continued.
"No."
Hoskins was surprised by how calmly, how firmly, the word came out.
"Go ahead and cut, if that's what you're here to do," he continued.
"If that's what you want," the voice said. "Of course, if that is what you want, we'll have to cut the throat of that bitch upstairs too, won't we?"
Hoskins' heart froze.
"Didn't think about that, did you?" the voice sneered. "Not so cocky now, are you, you fucking traitor?"
"I've been many things in my life," Hoskins replied as levelly as he could, with a knife at his throat and terror for his wife in his heart, "but never a traitor."
"I see you're a liar, too," the voice grated. "Now there's a surprise. But either way, you're coming with us, now."
The knife pressed harder.
"Aren't you?"
Hoskins was silent for a moment, and then he made himself nod. Timon Hoskins had no idea how long he'd sat bound to the chair. He had only the vaguest notion of where he might be. They'd brought him here in a freighter's cart, hidden under its canvas cover, with the blinding bag still over his head. He didn't think they'd hauled him around long enough to actually leave the city, although he couldn't be certain of that. He'd thought about crying out, despite the fact that it was unlikely anyone would have been wandering about the capital's streets to hear him at such a late hour. But his captors had gagged him after they'd bound him, and the voice with the knife had squatted beside his head the entire time. From the sound the cart's wheels had made when they finally reached their destination, and the noise of what had sounded like heavy sliding doors, he suspected he was in a warehouse somewhere. There were enough of those still standing idle and empty in the wake of the Carisian siege, and this one had seemed quite large. Large enough, he felt confident, that no one outside its walls was likely to hear anything that went on inside it. He'd spent his time silently reciting scripture. The familiar passages helped, yet not even they could dissolve the cold, frozen lump in his belly. The nature of his abduction and the threat against Delors told him entirely too much about the men behind it, and he was only mortal. There were limits to the amount of fear even the strongest faith could nullify. No doubt they were leaving him here, abandoned and alone, to let that fear work upon him. He wished he could say the strategy wasn't working, but a door opened suddenly behind him. He stiffened, muscles tensing, then blinked painfully against the light as the bag was snatched off of his head at last.
The light, he realized a moment later, wasn't actually as bright as it had seemed to his darkness-accustomed eyes. It took them a few seconds to adjust, and then his gaze focused on the wiry, brown-haired, brown-eyed man standing facing him with his forearms folded across his chest. The man was probably at least 20 years younger than Hoskins, with a severely scarred cheek. It looked like an old burn, and even now Hoskins felt a twinge of sympathy for whatever sort of injury could have produced that deep and disfiguring a scar.
"So," the scar-faced man said, and Hoskins' sympathy evaporated abruptly as he recognized the voice from his study. "Have you been enjoying a quiet little meditation, Father?"
His sneer turned the clerical title into an obscenity, and Hoskins felt his own eyes hardening in response.
"As a matter of fact," he forced himself to say calmly, "I have. You might try it someday yourself, my son."